to join in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Please call the roll.
Mr. Trapp?
Here.
Mr. Scala?
Here.
Mr. Thomas?
Yeah.
Ms. Nauzer?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Mr. McDavid?
Here.
Mr. Ruffin?
Here.
We have minutes from the regular council meeting of September 21st, 2015. Are there any corrections? If not, may I have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. The agenda has the following changes. If there is no objection, we'll remove 301-15, 314-15, and add B-315-15. Are there any other corrections to the agenda? If not, may I have a motion and second to approve the agenda as amended?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Welcome to the meeting. We offer several opportunities for public comment during the meeting. At the public hearings, old business, new business, there is an open comment section at the end of the meeting where anybody can talk for 3 minutes about anything. We'll start with appointments to boards and commissions. We'll start with the Bicycle Pedestrian Commission. Elke Boyd currently is on the commission as qualified for knowledge of bicycling, bike safety, and bikeways. But she is asking to be removed from that and placed on the Bicycle Pedestrian Commission under the category of knowledge of street construction and maintenance. May I have a motion and a second to approve?
So moved.
Moved. Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. For the Board of Adjustment, we have one qualified applicant for the one alternate vacancy. May I have a motion and a second to appoint Paul Girard?
So moved. Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. For the City of Columbia New Century Fund Incorporated Board, we have one qualified applicant. May I have a motion and a second to appoint Andrew Gabreau?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. For the Columbia Community Development Commission, we have one applicant for the Ward 4 vacancy. May I have a motion second to appoint Michael Fletcher?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. We have one appointment, one applicant for the one at-large vacancy. May I have a motion second to appoint Paul Girard?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. For the Columbia Vision Commission, we have three applicants. May I have a motion and second to appoint Daniel Follett to one of the terms ending in 2017?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. May I have a motion and second to appoint Paul Girard for one of the terms ending in 2016?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. We have a motion second to appoint Susan Marshall to the last term ending in 2016.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. For the Mayor's Council on Physical Fitness and Health, we have one qualified applicant. We have a motion second to appoint Jose Ramirez.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. For the University of Missouri Extension Council of Boone County, we have one qualified applicant. May I have a motion second to appoint Thomas Salee?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. For the Citizens Police Review Board, we have five qualified applicants for the three vacancies. Please call the roll on the first vacancy.
Mr. Trapp?
Andrew Fisher.
Mr. Scala?
Andrew Fisher.
Mr. Thomas?
Andrew Fisher.
Ms. Nauzer.
Andrew Fisher.
Ms. Peters.
Andrew Fisher.
Mr. McDavid.
Andrew Fisher.
Mr. Ruffin.
Andrew Fisher.
Please call the roll on the second vacancy.
Trapp.
Steve Schaltmeyer.
Mr. Scala.
Steve Schaltmeyer.
Mr. Thomas.
Steve Schaltmeyer.
Nauzer.
Steve Schaltmeyer.
Peters.
Steve Schaltmeyer.
Mr. McDavid.
Steve Schaltmeyer.
Mr. Ruffin.
Steve Schaltmeyer.
Please call the roll on the third vacancy.
Mr. Trapp.
Val DeBrunts.
Mr. Scala.
James Turley.
Mr. Thomas.
Val DeBrunts.
Ms. Nauzer.
Val DeBrunts.
Ms. Peters.
Val DeBrunts.
Mr. McDavid.
James Turley.
Mr. Ruffin.
Val DeBrunts.
For the Commission on Cultural Affairs, we have four applicants, but we have one of the positions we can only appoint one county resident. And so I'm going to ask for a roll call vote on the the two candidates for county are Becky Covington Panic and William Williams. So I'll call the roll on the vacant county position.
Mr. Trapp.
William Williams.
Mr. Scala.
William Williams.
Mr. Thomas.
Becky Covington Panic.
Nauzer.
William Williams.
Peters.
William Williams.
Mr. McDavid.
Becky Covington Panic.
Mr. Ruffin.
William Williams.
Please call the roll on the next vacancy. Actually, let me rephrase that. May have a motion and a second to appoint William Bondison.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. May I have a motion and second to appoint Carol Schmitz.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed say nay. For the Human Services Commission, there are two qualified applicants for the vacancy. Please call the roll.
Mr. Trapp.
Tonya Compton.
Mr. Scala.
Tonya Compton.
Thomas.
Tonya Compton.
Ms. Nauzer.
Tonya Compton.
Ms. Peters.
Tonya Compton.
Mr. McDavid.
Tonya Compton.
Mr. Ruffin.
Tonya Compton.
For the Substance Abuse Advisory Commission, we have five qualified applicants for the two general vacancies. Please call the roll on the first vacancy.
Mr. Trapp.
Molly Borgmeyer.
Mr. Scala.
Joseph Priestmeyer.
Mr. Thomas.
Molly Borgmeyer.
Ms. Nauzer.
Joe Priestmeyer.
Ms. Peters.
Joe Priestmeyer.
Mr. McDavid.
Molly Borgmeyer.
Mr. Ruffin.
Molly Borgmeyer.
Borgmeyer has it. Please call the roll on the second general vacancy.
Mr. Trapp.
Gina Long.
Scala.
Joseph Priestmeyer.
Thomas.
Gina Long.
Nauzer.
Joseph Priestmeyer.
Peters.
Joseph Priestmeyer.
Mr. McDavid.
Joseph Priestmeyer.
Mr. Ruffin.
Joseph Priestmeyer.
Priestmeyer has it. Those who have contacted the city manager's office by noon on Wednesday prior to the council meeting can speak at the beginning of the meeting on any topic that's not on the agenda. Only two people can speak on the same topic. Tonight we have four requests. I'll yield 5 minutes to each speaker. I will point out that the council does not address these issues at the time the comments are made, but we very likely may discuss them during open council comment section at the end of the meeting. So I will yield 5 minutes to Sky Jimenez.
Good evening. My name is Sky Jimenez. I live at 3101 Abbeywood Drive in Columbia, and I have lived in Columbia since 1971. In that time, I have been a teacher and a counselor for the Columbia Public Schools here in Columbia. And I'm here to talk tonight about the task force recommendation about children's mental health issues and services. When I was a counselor, there were a lot of issues for children involving mental health issues. Identification really wasn't that big of an issue because you could ask any teacher, you know, to identify children in their classroom who needed services, and they could do that. But there were some other issues. First of all, lack of services, and especially for very young children. Counseling for young children is a very different issue than for teenagers or adults. And there were not enough therapists in Columbia who dealt with very young children. Another problem was that fewer and fewer therapists accepted Medicaid. And I worked in a high-risk school, Parkade, and you know, all of our parents were using Medicaid, so that was a difficulty. And the biggest issue was transportation. Because even if we connected children with services, getting them to those services was a huge issue. So now, though, after being retired for a few years, coming back into this issue, I'm very excited and encouraged about several different things. One is the task force recommendation that Columbia Public Schools and the City of Columbia work together on this issue. Another is, of course, the sales tax that was passed to help fund these issues. But I'm also excited to learn about some programs that are in development right now, such as FACE, which stands for the Family Access Center for Excellence, which provides centralized services for children, but not only for children, but for their families. Because we all know when children have mental health issues, the families have other issues that need to be addressed as well. We also know about the reasons to continue to work on these issues. One is, of course, the goal that we have in our city of social equity. The children who come from poverty areas need to have access to the same services as other children have access to. We're also concerned about lowering the crime rate. And when children have these services, they are less likely to become involved in crime. We're also concerned about the cost of foster care, and we know that if families don't get the services they need, often their children wind up in foster care. There's also the cost of incarceration, and so many of our kids who are high risk run the risk of not completing high school and of getting involved in crime. So this involves the loss of our children, and that means the loss of our future leaders. So what I'm asking the City Council for tonight, after talking to several people, including Aaron Thompson, who's the director of the FACE program, Karen Cade, who's the president of Family Counseling Center, and Kelly Wallace, who's the director of the Boone County Community Services Department, I'm asking the City Council to please help support and promote these programs that provide access to children and to families, and to invite Aaron Thompson and Kelly Wallace to speak to the council about their programs and about the needs they now have. Both of them are very excited about doing this and would love to be invited. I would also like to encourage the city and the schools to work together to allow therapists to meet with children in school buildings. This totally solves the transportation problem that we have had. And I'd also like to ask for support of more summer programs. Many of our children who get access and are connected to services, great, and then summer happens, and their services are dropped because there's nowhere to meet with them. So if we had more summer programs and longer summer programs, therapists could meet with the children during those times. So I thank you for listening, and I know you understand the importance of this issue because the children literally are our future and our future leaders. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'll yield 5 minutes to Pac Matthews.
Hello. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Pac Matthews. I'm here speaking on behalf of a group called Faith Voices, a network of faith communities throughout the state, and I'm here also to, I'm in support of the efforts of Race Matters. I'm here to address the opportunity before us as white folks and a community that is predominantly white, and the opportunity that is before us to change the course of racism in our community. For those of us who are raised to see ourselves as white folks, it's all too easy to console ourselves that with the thought that it doesn't impact my life, that I'm not behaving in an overtly bigoted way, or as our Tribune publisher recently printed, we passed all the laws that were asked for, what else can we do but smile? However, this won't do because as white people, we cannot experience our full humanity if we continue to avoid facing our history, if we continue to pretend that a social system that works well for just a few of us won't bite us in the tail. The notion of race was created by my ancestors in the early days of this country to keep Irish people from thinking that they had an equal stake in this country. A key mark of white privilege is the extent to which you think racism doesn't touch you. If you assume that incarceration rates, predatory lending, racial profiling, or even the more distant expressions of racism we find in the world, hunger statistics, are not a primary threat to us or our family, then we're enjoying the temporary bubble of white privilege. It's painful to have that bubble burst on you, but demographically that's already happened. We white people are already the minority in the globe. And we are raised in this myth, and soon the demographic reality will be that we are the minority. And will we be a model minority? Do we even know what that looks like? But if you pop the bubble of the myth yourself, you liberate yourself and expose yourself to a grand new vista of possibilities of human connection, mental and emotional health. And we got an example of how this could happen at the latest homecoming parade, when a group of courageous black students, after trying every respectable channel to reach UN President Tim Wolf, took their message to the streets and blocked his car and had an impromptu education rally for the crowd. For 10 minutes, we watched these courageous students hold forth and not be baited. As they tried to educate us about the history of racism at MU. After a bit, a group of white people decided it was their purpose to use their privilege to get between the students and Mr. Wolf's car, apparently thinking he needed protection. Then the students inspired so many people in the crowd that white folks started to come up and stand with the black students, suddenly changing the whole dynamic, that the initial group of white people decided, oh, this looks like we're trying to stop the car too. They suddenly just disappeared into the crowd. White privilege depends on the way we white people act around each other. So we can start by starting to talk about racial issues. Don't wait till a person of color enters the room or joins your organization. Start talking about it now. One fun way to do this is every time you have a conversation and someone, you refer to someone that you know, you say, oh yeah, I just called my white plumber and he's gonna come over and work on my house. Just start changing your language. You will start seeing the edges of your privilege. You'll start seeing where your privilege costs you, and you can start changing your community in many, many ways.
30 seconds, please.
Sure. So the myth of whiteness is just that. It's a myth. Its temples are being put to different purposes. Its clerics are disavowing it, and hacks are trying to take their place. But we can change this myth, and we can lead our way. We can help lead our fellow citizens into a new community, stop trading our humanity for trinkets of security. We do these things for ourselves, we'll do these things for our fellow Colombians, and ultimately do it for yourself. I thank you.
Thank you. I'll yield 5 minutes to Grace Vega.
Ms. Grace Vega, I live at 3008 Middlebush Drive here in Columbia, and I have lived in Columbia since 2002. My city council person is Ian Thomas, and I just want to give some special thanks to Mr. Thomas for his recent extreme responsiveness to the group Race Matters in our regard to the need to dismantle systemic racism in Columbia and its institutions. It's very much appreciated. I've long been aware of racial inequities and disparities in healthcare and education across the nation and in Columbia. I can honestly say that I've made some considerable contributions to leveling the playing field for limited English proficient and other able people in the healthcare systems right here in Columbia, as I worked as language services coordinator and coordinated interpreting translation services for over 90 different languages, including sign language, within the healthcare system at MU, and also served as an interpreter for Boone Hospital. However, it's taken the recent and far too numerous violent confrontations between police and people of color to finally move me to a more active role in helping to dismantle racism as it manifests in the arena of criminal justice and public safety. Needless to say, I was thrilled when I discovered that the city was apparently ahead of the game, as it already had commissioned a task force on community violence and had a remarkably complete list of recommendations in hand to improve processes, procedures, and outcomes in this regard. One such recommendation was to implement community policing and positive communication between police and residents. This recommendation seems to resonate with folks at various levels of Columbia City government. However, my fear is that currently it's sort of a buzzword for a lot of people, as there seems to be a bit of a lack of common understanding and definition of community policing amongst leaders and community members alike. As another member of our group, Race Matters, mentioned last month, definitions have ranged from the presence of two officers in Douglas Park with possible expansion to other neighborhoods, to the assignment of patrol sergeants and officers to specific beats within their sector, where they focus on building relationships with citizens and businesses in efforts to solve problems. Additionally, I've recently become aware that this isn't the first time that Columbia has gone down the community policing path. I understand that efforts were begun and lasted for a couple of years in the late 1990s. And my understanding, of course, this is just a scuttlebutt from people who lived here then, was that those efforts were abandoned because of lack of mayoral and council support, and that the police chief, who was specifically hired at the time, worked for 2 years and left because of that lack of support. Thus, I come with several questions tonight. One is whether there's agreement amongst all the leadership within the city, mayor, city manager, police chief, as well as the rest of the police force, on what community policing actually is, how it should be implemented, and on the need for specific funding, for especially funding sources for the training that would be required for community policing. Additionally, there are questions of hiring practices that need to be brought up to speed in order to bring on the appropriate new hires that understand and agree and support the philosophies of community policing. The COPS organization, which I think all of you are well aware of, the Community-Oriented Policing Services of the DOJ, has included three components in community policing, which include community partnerships, organizational transformation, and problem solving. I want to say that I really appreciate the fact that the committee or the city had applied for, or the police department applied for, the procedural justice training that went on in August. That's a really great step. And it seems like a good start towards the organizational transformation piece of community policing. However, what I'm wondering are what the plans and steps are that are being taken to create the community partnership piece, which is actually the bedrock of the model of and the basis for the identification of problems, as well as the solutions that should be discovered in collaboration with the police force. I thank you for this time to present my questions and thoughts on community policing as recommended by the task force, and I hope to hear some answers to those questions in upcoming meetings. Thank you.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
I just wanted to let you know that on this Friday, the 23rd, the Columbia Community Policing Unit is going to be hosting an event here at City Hall at 7 o'clock, so I would invite you
thank
to please
you. I've
come
got that on my calendar.
Great.
I understood it's called the Outreach Unit or Community Policing. Oh, well whatever.
Yes, it's our Community Policing Unit. So great. I'm glad you were involved in that. I received that invitation.
I'll yield 5 minutes to Dick Parker.
Thank you. I'm Dick Parker. I reside at 215 West Sexton Road. The Clean Power Plan regulations were released by EPA in August and called for a 37% reduction in tons of carbon dioxide emissions in Missouri by 2030. The 37% is based upon the quantity of carbon dioxide emitted from electric generators in 2012. Just how that reduction will be distributed is not yet set, but Columbia can use the 37% reduction as an approximation of what we will need to achieve. This will need to be accomplished with renewable energy and reduction in demand through energy efficiency. Columbia has been a leader in Missouri in reducing demand through energy efficiency and renewable energy. It is something we can all be proud of. The City Council, as the policymaker for the Columbia Electrical Utility, deserves the primary credit, so you get stuck with the job. Carbon dioxide production in Columbia is essentially equivalent to the use of non-renewable energy. It will be difficult for us to achieve a 37% reduction. In fact, we project a 53% increase in demand for the services provided by electricity over this period. Even with our 30% renewable energy goal, we would see a growth of non-renewable energy and thus carbon dioxide of 16%. The projected demand results in us producing 84% more carbon dioxide than the projected goal of a 37% reduction. There are two ways to achieve the goal: more renewable energy and less demand for electricity. We could achieve the goal by raising our renewable energy goals from 30% to 62%. We could achieve the goal by reducing our demand by 32% through energy efficiency. We will need to use some of both approaches. Energy efficiency is less expensive than energy from renewable energy or from energy from non-renewable energy. I believe we would be wise to embrace as much reduction of demand through energy efficiency as possible over the next 15 years, so that we do not have to generate all that extra energy from renewable energy. The least costly way of achieving energy efficiency is by building it into new buildings. But construction over the next 15 years will not achieve the goal. The majority of the reduction in demand will have to come from energy efficiency in existing buildings. Some technological changes, such as LED lights, will help, but technological changes alone cannot achieve the goal. Importantly, the savings from energy efficiency makes money saved on utility bills available to citizens to spend in Columbia. In addition, the cost of creating energy efficiency goes to businesses working in Columbia. Both aspects are good economic development, and we need to think of it in those terms. We should work hard on increasing energy efficiency, and we'll certainly need more renewable energy than our current 30% goal. The first opportunity for the City Council in this line will be to support the International Building Codes for energy efficient residential and commercial buildings. These codes are revised every 3 years. In the last round, the City Council supported the International Code for energy efficiency only in residential buildings. Since commercial buildings use roughly the same quantity of electricity as residential ones, we should support both the residential and the commercial energy efficiency chapters of the International Code as written. I've provided the Council with a table which tries to summarize the impact of the 37% reduction. we will need to have made substantial progress by the first intermediate goal in 2022. Good luck.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. We'll move to public hearings. Please read item A.
Agenda item A is the construction of and installation of concrete pads and bus shelters at various locations throughout the city.
Staff?
Yes, this project includes purchasing and installing 18 bus shelters at 14 locations throughout the city of Columbia. The locations were chosen based upon proximity to connection points, ridership reports from automatic passenger count data identifying the most popular and used bus stop locations, a public input meeting, and a community-wide vote in February and March of 2015. The proposed locations are listed in the council memo. Staff worked with the University Architectural Studies program to select the shelter design from the winner of a student design competition. Design oversight was provided by Como Connect staff, bus riders, the city's Transportation Advisory Commission, COMET, and professional architect and MU professor Michael Goldschmidt. The new shelters will be ADA compliant and incorporate user features such as LED lighting. The project cost of the 18 shelters is estimated at $360,000 of the total project budget for $569,705. And the funds will be provided through CDBG funding, FTA grants, and local transportation match. We did have some concerns about some of the locations. The Cleek property is not in support of the location near them. And we did talk with the Boone Lumber and Broadway Place Apartments. They would prefer to have an agreement that the locations could be removed if the properties are redeveloped rather than grant right-of-way, and staff's supportive of that. So we'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Couple of questions. Number one, your report says the estimated cost of each shelter is $11,000, but this is a $569,000 project divided by 18 shelters is $31,000 apiece.
So each shelter itself, just the shelter, is $11,000. That we're, as he said in the notes there, that it's $360,000. We're estimating about $20,000 per location. We think that's probably very high, but in some locations we're going to be adding sidewalk and some other features to allow for better access to those locations. So some of those locations might be under $15,000, some might be over $20,000. So we're just kind of estimating high there. That entire $560,000 amount is what the total project cost will be. These are just the first 18 of the most high priority locations.
So you're saying that you'll build more?
Absolutely.
Until you get the $569,000.
That's correct.
That will determine how many you put in. Second question is the Como Connect changed routes last year or two. This sort of looks like permanent construction. Mm-hmm. Are you confident in the site selections?
Yes. So these particular locations for these first 18 are in locations that we anticipate, well, both through ridership reports and then data from our old routes, that these are some of our most high traffic areas, so where our, I guess you'd say, the highest density of ridership is. So we would anticipate that should there be any changes even in the future, that these are still going to be locations that will be on routes.
Thank you. Mr. Scala.
Yeah, just a few questions. I think in our initial budget discussions, I brought up this issue of bus shelters, and I think it's absolutely essential, and I'm glad this was in our budget and so on. As I look through this, however, and I understand the complications of the competition for the university and the award-winning design and all the rest of it, my inclination was always to try and minimize the cost of these bus shelters as far downward as possible. From, I mean, initially the numbers were, we were talking about $20,000 a shelter, and I understand the pad limitations and the ground moving and so on, but I just would like, and the answer to a question is, how much did the bus shelters that we have in place, some of the very, I won't say plain Jane, but Connolly in front of some of the Walmarts and some of the rest of them, just your basic bus shelter without any considerations of right-of-way purchases and all of it, where I understand that takes up a lot of this money. How much do those cost? Does that run roughly half of what this design runs, or what does that mean?
They're actually very close. They're between $8,000 and $10,000, depending on whether you're adding lighting fixtures and things like that. So this design is actually pretty close. I mean, it's a little bit higher, but it is is pretty close in comparison. In fact, we just were pricing out some of the older style shelters, and they've gone up considerably since the last time we purchased them. So they're running between $8,000 and $10,000 already. And that's not counting concrete pad or any of that type
I'll
of
save some of my comments about, you know, about maximizing the number and so on. The other thing that we talked about at the time when we were talking about budgetary considerations were to try and get as many of these as possible on those routes, obviously, that you have already selected that are the most dependable. And frankly, if there are some issues with regard to purchasing right-of-way, maybe we ought to bypass some of those problematic areas and go to your secondary choice where there aren't as many problems. I couldn't help but notice that there is virtually nothing in the third way. There's some. But one of the routes that we talked about in the third ward was this corridor between Battle High School and the downtown area, and I don't really see anything represented there, and it kind of pains me, because the point was to prevent people from sitting on the curb to get as many shelters as possible. I understand the monetary limitations, but are there any other secondary plans? Do you have other plans should some of these not work out?
Where absolutely, yes. So there's at least 34, I think, locations that we've identified, and these were just the first 18 based on, again, connection points, so where routes meet, where more than multiple routes meet in one location, and then, of course, those ridership reports. And then, of course, we kind of scale down from there. So there are certainly some in the third ward and along Clark Lane as well. I think up around Indian Hills was one location that we were looking at as well.
Thank you.
There has been some discussion in the past about encouraging sponsors, businesses close to the location to place an advertisement on part of a bus shelter and contribute to the cost of the shelter. Where does that discussion stand right now?
We really haven't gone too far down that road, to be honest, because we're going to require some ordinance changes, of course, as far as putting advertising, because we have advertising on the buses, but that's a very specific ordinance change there. So we would have to have an ordinance change to put advertising in the shelters themselves. Right now, we're kind of focused on adding some art components to them so we can prevent graffiti and things like that. But that is certainly an option that we could look at a little closer if it's something you'd like us to look at.
Do you have any sense of how much those advertisements could sell for?
No, we really haven't dialed into it very much yet.
This is really the first step, is to get permission to move forward.
Okay.
There's already a shelter at the library. I wonder why it's being removed and replaced.
So we're talking about putting one on the opposite side of the street, but then we like to have I guess what you would call buddy stops. So one on both sides of the street, and so we'd like to kind of have those shelters kind of matching and have the same type of design elements. And so that shelter would just get moved to another location. It wouldn't just be discarded or removed.
That was my guess. I just wanted to confirm that.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. First of all, I want to say that I can see that many of the proposed shelters are in the first ward, and so I want to commend you for that, because I believe it moves us closer towards our agenda for social equity, and so that is certainly a positive direction. I wanted to find out at what point in this process would you be willing to entertain recommendations for alternative sites?
I would say at any time during the process.
Anytime.
Yes, certainly.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is because there has been a request that was forwarded to me from the Community Montessori School, which is on the corner of Providence and Sexton. They say that there is no crosswalk there, there's no bus shelter, and what tends to happen is that people who are pedestrians who are trying to get to Kilgore's or to Hickman High School are crossing at that particular corner, and during inclement weather, they're taking refuge under the canopy of the school. And so anything that we can do to accommodate that particular location with a bench or a shelter would certainly be more beneficial for the children who are attending that school.
You can take a look at that one directly.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I'll open the public hearing. Would anyone like to speak?
Good evening, everybody. My name is Cheryl Price. I live at 511 Parkade Boulevard. I am the current chair of the Public Transit Advisory Commission. I've also served on the Disabilities Commission for the city for 6+ years, and served as the president of Services for Independent Living's Board of Directors for many years. At first, transportation, in my mind, was what do we need for people with disabilities? But as my exposure grew to more and more and more people within the city coming to me and asking me questions and things, I realized that public transportation has to be available for all citizens in the community. And that, again, is part of social equity, Councilman Ruffin, that you and Mr. Mathis have worked also so hard on. It leads to a really quality community when you have public transportation available. It can improve the economy. As an example I used to use is IBM coming and adding that to our economy and them asking us for a bus route out there, and we provided that for them. IBM's become a little controversial, but we still did work with them, and we will work with any industry or company that wants to come into Columbia and provide whatever kind of transportation needs they have for their workers. Safe and comfortable shelters are an integral part of that public transit system. If people have to stand out in the snow, in the rain, in the dark, it's not safe and it's not comfortable, quite honestly. We have many bus stops like that, and we're trying to alleviate those by adding bus shelters. The Public Transit Advisory Commission has worked throughout this process with Como Connect, with the Public Works Department, with a number of the council persons. And we feel that we've developed the best way to move forward that we have right now with the money that we have. We're also fortunate in that, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dave or Drew, the shelters are in panels that can be dismantled and moved or exchanged if they're ruined in some way. So that is also another thing that's a money-saving proposition for us. So all in all, it's just really, really important for us to keep working on our public transit system. We're making progress, but we have a ways to go yet. So please help us by appropriating the money for the bus shelters. And I assure you that as chair of the PTEC, we will do our very best to oversee the spending of that money also. Thank you very much, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Brooke Jacobs. I live at 12 East Ridgely Road, and I'm on the library board. And we understand that there was going to be a new bus stop put in front of the library. The library board met on October 15th, and it was our conclusion that we do believe that the bus stop that we have there now is adequate. It's in a well-lighted area, and it is covered already. But if the council is going to give us a new bus stop at the library, we would like to have we'd like the library to be consulted as to the artwork that's put on it, as well as the lighting, just to make sure that it's in concert with what the library has already. As far as what the issue of whether there would be an easement or a memorandum of understanding, the board of the library would prefer to have just a memorandum of understanding, I guess that would also save the city some money, perhaps. Finally, we'd just like the council to know that right now about 1,700 people utilize the library every day. Of course, a fair amount of them do use public transportation, So we are thankful that the bus stop is there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm Ed Baker, and I represent the Holiday Inn Executive Center. And there's a proposed right off of Nip Street and Bernadette. And I've got some real concerns with that location. And since the state has rerouted, so when we have a convention, 1,000 people breaking, and the mall has 1,000 people breaking, that whole road is a danger zone. So for them to cross there is the worst place to cross. I would strongly suggest that we move it further down. And the best thing we'd do is reroute it so that we let the people out on the side of the mall. That's where they're going. They're not, I wish they were all coming to me, but they're not. They're coming to the mall, and to make them cross the street makes no sense. We should get an easement on the mall side, have them come the other way, so people are not crossing that busy street and endangering themselves. As a second alternative, if that can't be done, I would at least suggest that we move it down, because most of your traffic is turning right past Nip Street there. So at least you'll lessen the traffic as they're dodging cars going across to the mall. But I would strongly suggest that we try to get it on the mall side where people are going, so that it's a lot safer for our residents. If not, I would move it down so they can use the next crosswalk, which would be a better location, I believe. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Good evening, Tracy Wilson, Klee Camp. I'm elated that we're going to have bus shelters. I'm super cranky when I get up every day and drive down Providence and I see people standing on the side of the road. I'm like really, really upset. I've seen elderly people standing in the weeds. I see people standing in the sun, and I am also a little cranky that IBM gets first dibs on getting roads and buses to them before our people of Columbia, but I'm happy now that we're doing that. I didn't get to look at the map very closely, so I don't know if there are routes that are coming on Providence. Sounds like not, but if not, I'll still be cranky, and I'll keep persisting and complaining about it. Thank you.
Rick Shanker, 1829 Cliff Drive. She took my role as cranky person. That's not right. I wanted to know how mobile these things are. Over the years, we've had bus stops and benches placed, especially in my neighborhood. Sometimes there's a bus there and sometimes not. So how flexible are these things?
So the shelter or bench can be moved very easily. The concrete, of course, is concrete. It's poured in the ground, and that would have to be broken up and moved.
And
but the shelters can be moved very quickly.
Do these come pre-built, or are they?
No, they're going to come in panels that we can assemble in whatever formation that we want. So they're very easy to assemble and disassemble.
Thank you.
All right, there it is. My name's Dennis Thompson. I live on Blue Grouse, and I got a letter in the mail, and you guys are wanting to put a shelter between on Blue Ridge between Providence and Rangeline, and you're wanting to use up 8 foot by 16 foot of my property, and I've been living there for 10 years, and I have no problem with assisting the city and helping the city out as much as I can. But my concerns are if we put this shelter in my backyard, which is basically 40 feet from my house, there's a ditch back there. My yard is fenced with a picket fence, and there's a ditch there. Is this going to cause problems? Do I have to maintain the ditch? Do I have to maintain, like, any trash? Or it's taking up 16 feet of my 60-foot property line, and my concern is that with the people tearing up my property, I don't want them coming on my land. And I bought that property at a premium price, and my concern is that they're going to tear it up on me and decrease my property value and not respect my property at all. That's my concern. While I'm here. Is this appropriate meeting for this?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Thank you very much for discussing your property. Thank you.
Yep.
I'm Brad Eifert. I live at 1000 Hewlin Drive, and I own Boone County Lumber and the adjacent parcels at Rangeline and Roger Street. So right there by Columbia College, come down Rangeline, you're looking at a landscaped area that we chose not to asphalt, just to be friends with our neighbors, Jeff Gore, and try to soften that corner a little bit. And currently, the bus shelter is Jeff Gore's rental property front porch. When inclement weather hits, they go sit on his porch. If it's a pretty day like this morning, I usually ride a bike to work. They sit on a big stone that is out there in that landscaped area. I just wanted to express my support for a bus stop there. We've had some really productive conversations with staff from Public Works, and we've had some joint tours down there and had come to an agreement that as long as there's not a legal encumbrance to it, we're not doing easements and purchases or rentals, I'd be delighted to have the bus shelter in that location and it won't be a problem at all. We had come to an understanding that if the bus route changed, you move the shelter, or if there were future development and realignment of the streets perhaps, I could ask that the shelter be moved. And as long as we're all willing to work with that kind of flexibility, it's no worries for me at all, and I'm delighted to support public transportation. I had had conversations about preferences to move it further west, but it only would serve one bus route. So it sounds like this spot makes sense. And like I said, if we can be flexible, no rent, no sale, put it there. If one of us gets ready to move it, we'll move it. I had not heard, the only thing I would really like is maybe a trash can and a butt can. I just get a lot of trash and a lot of cigarette butts. The idea of sponsorship had never been brought up, but if you would like something done there that's in keeping with an adjacent forest products company, I'd be delighted to consider something out of cedar or fir that would be appropriate for that location. Thank you.
Dan Cullimore, 715 Lyon Street. I'm the president of the North Central Columbia Neighborhood Association. We've actually had some conversations with Mr. Eifert about bus shelter locations in the neighborhood. The Neighborhood Association is the beneficiary of a grant that the City and County Health Department received to promote active living and healthy lifestyles. And part of that benefit for the neighborhood is funding for a bus shelter. And so that was the initial conversation that I had with Mr. Eifert. It turns out that my understanding is that the city is going to use that funding to reestablish a shelter at a location further down Rogers near the corner of North 8th Street. It would be on the opposite side of the street. And unfortunately, in that location, it would only serve the gold connector route. The location of the one at the south end of Rangeline Street will serve both the downtown red route and the gold connector routes. I'm glad to bring the full support of the North Central Columbia Neighborhood Association to you to encourage bus shelters. I think that in terms of gaining ridership, it's probably one of the more important things that you can do. And so the Neighborhood Association is happy to support this. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Alice Turner, 1204 Fieldcrest. I want to thank staff for, you know, moving this bus shelter thing around. I think everyone's ready and excited to be getting them, hopefully some of them in before winter. But I wanted to actually refer to what the gentleman from, who unfortunately has left, from the Holiday Inn Executive Center talked about in the mall. I know I'm on the PTAC Commission, and I raised the question, well, why can't the buses go closer to the mall? I've seen this in other cities. And so I want to invite council members to maybe address this with mall management. Can we get, because I do believe staff has tried to address this, but, and perhaps in league with the staff, Mr. Holiday and Executive Center manager, you know, can we get them closer to the mall? That would be certainly the ideal and a lot safer. So I just wanted to put that out there. Thank you.
My name's John Clark. I live at 403 North 9th Street. And so I was listening to this. And so one of my friends said, are in the bus stops on Providence or North Providence? And the thinking back is, this is a traffic flow issue. I don't think there's a good solution, because where are you going to pull the buses over when you've got the need for a fairly narrow four-lane street? I'm not sure how you think about that, but I know the solution has been to run things up Fifth Street a little bit over. But that does not really solve the problem for the community Montessori school, which is on Providence, and the lack of ability to go back and forth across that. These are going to be difficult things to figure out, probably including much more issues about crosswalks and so forth. And somehow or another, our budgets for Como Connect and our sidewalks and these things actually need to be connected, because those are, for this to be meaningful, those costs are heavily interrelated. So that's the first thing. The second thing was, the gentleman from the north part of Columbia mentioned the trash. Well, let's see. In my long years with the North Central Columbia Neighborhood Association, you cannot believe the amount of angst caused by students driving to Hickman, parking on North 7th all the way over to Coates and Fairview, having lunch, the trash, I mean just junk, litter, all this kind, exactly the kind of things in a different way this just gentleman, right? The school did lots of kind of things to help with this. It never really totally got solved, but that's part of the cost of the system, folks. So building into this kind of thing, the cost of the cleanup, the policing, and so forth, should be part of the system, part of applying for the grants. And I must admit, recently I heard a comment in another issue with North Central about somebody saying, well, we chose this place and so forth because of what available resources were to do things. I'm sorry. Most of our governmental bodies have done a horrible job of balancing burdens and benefits. And they allow people to make the decisions about the burden and the benefit based on some overall policy. Or this, the classic example for me was a quarry on Greasy Springs, 400-house subdivision, and the county was going to have to pay a bit more, either to put in sound barriers or other things, because that's where they got all their gravel for the whole county. That was, I do not think, a good balancing. I don't think the staff should be making those decisions. So I'm hoping you will pay real attention to setting up a mechanism by which that balancing overall and lots of things is much more openly addressed, and you're careful not to say, well, just because we have budgetary problems, we're going to put it on this person. Not all of it, but you need to pay attention to these for this to really work and generate the overall public support, because I am amazingly supportive.
Anyone else? I'll close the public hearing. Council comments?
I'll be happy to jump in first. Thanks very much for bringing this forward. And
I really appreciate the efforts you've gone to with individual property owners to find a workable solution. The MOU with Boone County Lumber is a great example. And I think I was CC'd on some correspondence with another property owner that you also reached a similar resolution on. And I do think that as public transportation becomes more accepted, more commonplace, bigger ridership, some of the concerns about having a bus stop in front of your property will go away. These will all have trash cans, I think.
Yes, every location will. And we actually, to address one of the comments, we in last year's budget, in the 15 budget, we added a service worker to help us with the maintenance of those shelters in anticipation of this. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Great. And certainly in other cities that have larger bus systems, it's not a problem at all, and I think we just have to kind of get our systems into place. Will you talk to the library about the design of that shelter?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes, we'll talk to at any of those locations where where there's an interested party. We'll be talking to them about the content of the art and those art components as well. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm not sure what to say about the Holiday Inn. I mean, I think there needs to be a bus stop on both sides of the road there. And I suspect that a lot of the people that work at the Holiday Inn use the bus to get there, so I think that probably is providing a service. I think what we really need is a crosswalk across Bernadette at some point along there, because it's a fair way to walk back to Stadium to get across. I think this is a great step forward. Bus shelters are very much a social equity issue. People that travel primarily by car have a lot of safety and comfort in getting around. People that travel by bus, a lot less. And this will make a big difference to the experience of bus riders. And that's important for, as at least one speaker mentioned, growing ridership in our system. And I think we are on a very positive trajectory with regard to that. Mr. Trapp and Mr. Ruffin and I were in Gainesville, Florida last week on a fact-finding visit organized by the Chamber of Commerce, and we saw a very well-developed bus system down there, which has something like five times as many rides per capita for the city of Gainesville as we have in Columbia. They have a bigger budget as well, but it works very well, and we heard over and over again over the 3 days we were there what a great system that is and how many different kinds of problems that solves. So I'm very happy to support this. I'm also happy that we're about to reach an agreement, or maybe we have reached an agreement with a consultant to come and do a long-range planning process with our community and with our different stakeholders that have an interest in public transportation here to figure out how we're going to improve this system over the next 3, 5, 10 years.
Yeah, just a few comments to follow up on some of the questions that I had earlier. I'm mostly concerned. I mean, we've been talking about, first of all, I'm very appreciative this is coming forward as a result of the budgetary discussions that we had, and we're finally going to get something on the ground. Some of us have been talking about this for several years, and along with Ms. Wilson-Kleekamp, when she was talking about seeing people out on the curb and in the rain, so on and so forth. This is sorely needed, and it's needed across the city. As usual, we have limited dollars and lots of needs. What else is new? That's true in almost every infrastructure we have. I will take your word for it that these things cost $11,000, but it blows my mind that these things cost that much money. Some of these things, as I understand, I mean, even with some of the bicycle rental facilities that some people just pick up with a crane and put in place, I get it that you have to level the ground and so on and so forth, but the idea, I mean, if you could cut that cost in half for just some of these things, I mean, you could put twice as many in, well, not necessarily, but you could put a substantial amount more. And I think at this point, what we're requiring is more functionality and less aesthetics at this point, even though I'd love to have, you know, a very attractive. Frankly, I don't think the run-of-the-mill, if you will, bus shelters that we have are not all that unattractive, and they're very serviceable. So that's the emphasis I would like to get the most bang out of our buck, and perhaps this approach whereby you have memorandums of understanding rather than purchases of right-of-way and so on and so forth might be something that's the fertile ground, if you excuse the pun, to use to try and spread these dollars as far as we possibly can. I think that's that may be a strategy by which, and it would also serve our needs in terms of sometimes the changes that occur in the transit system depending on the needs and so on and so forth. Because as I understand it, we are also discussing, we went from a very central location to a very distributed location, and now perhaps we're going to get to some sort of a hybrid, maybe use the downtown station as a hub as well. So some of these things do change. You don't want to change them too much, but you want to have enough portability that you don't necessarily have to invest in one particular place and then spend all that money while you have the possibility of moving some of these things around, if that's a possibility. So from my perspective, I'm very glad to see this. It's long overdue. I'm glad we're doing something about it. But whatever we can do to make sure that we have the numbers increase for these bus shelters along some of these routes, rather than investing in any particular area, I think the better off we are.
Let me jump in here because it gives me great pleasure to agree with Mr. Scala about frugality.
Heart attack.
This is a plea to the Public Transportation Advisory Commission, because there's $569,000 in this money. Most of it's federal money. Only $93,000 of it comes from our transportation sales tax. It's from block grant money and from an FTA grant. So there's $569,000. I don't think you can assume there's going to be more. You know, at $11,000, that's 51 shelters. So I think PTAC needs to be following this closely because, you know, don't let us at the city spend unwisely, because when the money's gone, we're done. We're done. So I hope that 10 years from now, there's 50 shelters out there, because by today's math, there's enough money for that. So stay on top of the city and monitor us hold our feet to the fire on this one.
I'll just add a couple comments. I actually have a couple questions, too, because listening to some of the testimony this evening. We were talking about, a gentleman came up and talked about, you know, the trash and potential problems on his property. And I see here on the information from staff that it's going to cost about $100 per bus shelter for additional maintenance and repair and cleaning. Now, when staff goes out there to clean, you said we're having trash cans at all our facilities, so will that mean cleaning up around the facility as well?
Absolutely, yeah. They'll do complete maintenance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so if there's trash,
Yes.
They will go pick that up. And so as the mayor said, we have the potential to build 51 bus shelters, and so as I've advocated numerous times for many of those bus shelters, as some of my fellow council members have talked about, you know, I too drive down Providence and Grindstone, and I've had the unfortunate time to see people standing out there in inclement weather, storms coming up, snowstorm. And so the faster we can get these bus shelters in and installed for the people throughout the community, I think the better off our transportation system will be, and more people will hopefully use the system because they'll have a safe place to be while they're waiting or disembarking from the buses. And Mr. Thomas brought up, and I've always been an advocate of public-private partnerships, and I seriously hope that we will leave here this evening and he will begin to investigate and look at how can we get the private sector to potentially advertise. I know it was a difficult thing on our buses that took a lot of teeth pulling, but we got there, and I think it certainly has helped us, especially in some of those times where gas prices were high and that was what kept our transportation system going. So any additional funding we can get into our bus shelters, the more bus shelters we can have and the faster we can get them up. So I will advocate for us to start on that tomorrow.
One point, we did put $500 million in the capital improvement sales tax that we did pass. So we do have $500,000 that's going to be coming forward in that ballot that was passed.
Great.
So we do have additional funding that this is not touching any of that money at this point.
Great. But again, that public-private partnership we can get advertising and that in those bus shelters, that's more on our, you know, revenue on our bottom line, and that's what we're looking for is revenue.
Can I just ask a couple of questions? One is, do you guys know how many bus shelters we presently have?
Yes, we have 26 shelters. About seven of those are currently in locations where we don't currently service them. So once we start putting these these pads out, we'll move those while we're waiting on the new shelters to come in. So we'll have others that we'll be able to move around once we kind of figure out where those locations are. So we haven't moved them because we didn't have the funding yet to pour the concrete, and so we should be able to do that pretty soon.
So then we'll have 44 bus shelters.
That's correct.
Do we have any idea how many we'd like for this city?
Well, I mean, everyone would like a shelter at every stop, but that's obviously not feasible. We have 34 connection points, so we would like to have one at every one of those connection points, and we don't have those right now. I don't think we have, but maybe at three of those that we actually have a shelter right now.
And do these 18 that you're trying to put in now, will they all be at connection points?
I think all but maybe two of them will be at connection points. That's correct.
Okay. And then have you talked to the folks at the mall about having a bus stop that actually...
Yeah, we used to go onto that property years ago. It's probably been close to 10 years ago, but we were asked to no longer go onto the property because the structure of the parking lot was not built for the weight of the constant passage of very heavy buses going through there, and so we were actually damaging the property in front of the mall.
Is that still true, or have they replaced the property?
I do not know the answer to that question.
Can we check?
Well, we can certainly check. We would also, the transit staff would actually encourage us to not go onto private property because especially during high traffic times, we would slow the routes down significantly. If you're talking about, like, say, around the Christmas time, you would never be able to keep those routes on time.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I noticed on an old bus stop that just had a bench that the bench was removed. Is that standard practice to remove benches when they're off route?
When they're off route, is that what you said?
Yeah, it seemed like, unless the bench was used, it doesn't sound like you put in new pads anywhere, so it wasn't like we needed the bench elsewhere. I just wondered why the bench was removed. I'm talking about
on an old route, is that what you're saying? It's a good question. I'd have to look at the specific instance.
North side of Leslie in front of McKnight Plaza.
I wouldn't know off the top of my head. I'd have to ask.
I'm curious sure. about that. And then just in regards to two bus stops in particular, it's my constituent on the Blue Ridge, if we could see if there's alternate routes. I see that there's a lot of work with the median and stuff there. I don't know if there's other alternatives that wouldn't impact this gentleman's property that might be less difficulty. It is, I can see that there's a need up there. I'm glad we've got the ridership to support it, so I don't want to not have a bus stop there. But if there's an alternate placement, if we could look and see if there's options, a lot of times we're good at accommodating those kinds of needs. I'm glad to hear that you've increased your maintenance. I've found bus stops in general to be pretty well maintained. One of the few folks who shovel their walks and in the city.
Yeah. And sometimes we're the only space.
and a pleasant respite. And one of the things I missed about having that bus stop on Leslie was really the trash can, which really serves more people. And this isn't quite related to this, but I think street trash cans is something that we really ought to look at. And can we fold that into our overall solid waste costs? One of the big complaints I get is from litter. And it's really difficult to deal with that from an enforcement possibility and just having more street trash cans. And right now we have parks picking up the trash, transit picking up the trash. What if we had solid waste picking up the trash? Just a thought. And could we combine those systems within systems into one kind of street trash can system? Berkeley, California has some issues, but one of the things they had that I really miss is there's just, you have something in your hand, you want to throw it away, there's a trash can every couple blocks. It's a bigger urban area, so I get that. But that would be something, I think, a little bigger than this particular issue. And then the other issue is the library bus shelter. It just looks like picking up an easement, changing an already well-functioning, popular bus stop just to match the design I'm on across the street. I'm not sure that that's really worth the cause and expense, just to echo Mayor and Mr. Scala said, we might save some dollars to not make those kinds of changes. If it was just swapping it out, I could get it to make a match, but if it's having to acquire an easement and deal with...
I don't believe we're asking for an easement.
No
there.
Easement.
No, we're just swapping it out, and then we'll take that shelter somewhere else.
No new pad or anything like that?
No, we'll use the existing pad.
Then that makes sense, because all things being equal, they should match if that can be done, and we're going to use that shelter somewhere else. Okay, well, nice job. This looks like a great proposal overall.
I just had a question to ask, and Mr. Trapp reminded me, because I noticed there's one, I think, on 8th Street over by Columbia College that that the bench was removed, and the pad is still there, and I wasn't sure about that. But it occurred to me that maybe that's another possibility. As much as I would like to see shelters at every single bus stop and nice shelters and get people out of the weather and so on and so forth, maybe another way, you know, in some less controversial areas or whatnot, is maybe we can just put a bench there that would not necessarily require the $11,000 or whatever it costs to put the shelter, but have the stuff in the ground so that you could do that at some point, given the amount of funding. Is that a potential for extending this to some degree?
Well, we actually have quite a few benches that we've moved over the years that we kind of have in storage. So really, it would just be a matter of pouring concrete to put those benches out. Now, the grants that we have are set up for putting out shelters specifically.
So they have to be used that way.
Yeah, that's really what we're.
But there may be other modes that we can use some of the existing.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be it. I mean, the more comfortable we can make folks with this bus system, the better if it is for us, for the folks, for the bus system, for everything else. And we need to try and stretch these dollars as much as possible.
Yes.
May I have a motion directing staff to proceed with plans and specifications for the bus shelters project?
So moved.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. We'll move to old business. Please read Bill 28715.
Council Bill 28715 is an ordinance authorizing a waterline replacement contract with Consolidated Public Water Supply District Number 1 of Boone County, Missouri, relating to the relocation of a portion of Rangeline Road as part of the Runway 1331 extension project at Columbia Regional Airport, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff?
Yes, as mentioned, as part of the Runway 1331 extension project at the Columbia Regional Airport, Rangeline Road will be realigned, causing the need to relocate an existing 3-inch water line. The waterline replacement contract with Consolidated Public Water is for a not-to-exceed amount of $10,000 to cover engineering fees, attorney's fees, and inspection fees. All expenses will be paid from the Rangeline Road relocation project and are eligible for a 90% FAA grant reimbursement. The amendment sheet was prepared for this legislation to include a copy of the waterline easement and the 2013 water distribution specifications for the contract. Be happy to answer any questions.
May I have a motion and second to amend 28715 per the amendment sheet?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on the motion to amend? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Questions? Council? Seeing none, would anyone from the public like to speak? Discussion? Council?
Please call the roll.
Council Bill 28715 as amended. Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
29115, please.
Council Bill 29115 is an ordinance accepting donated funds and 25 LED exterior wall scones from the Downtown Community Improvement District to be used by the Water and Light Department for street light improvements in the downtown area, appropriating funds and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
This ordinance allows for two things to happen. The first is for the downtown CID to donate $2,500 to the utility, and the second is to have this $2,500 to pay for wall lighting, LED wall lighting, in Alley A and the alley north of Broadway. And to provide some details, I've got Ryan Williams here to explain where and how this will work.
Donated $2,500 will be utilized to pay for the installation of 10 of the donated LED wall sconces on the city's garage at 8th and Cherry. 11 wall sconces will be used to replace existing street lighting in both Alley A and the alley north of Broadway, and the remaining 4 will be held in reserve for maintenance purposes. 2 existing dusk-to-dawn lights will also be replaced with more efficient LED street lighting as part of this project. Columbia Water and Light will work with the downtown CID to obtain owner permission prior to the removal of existing sitting lighting and the installation of new LED wall sconces and dusk-to-dawn lights. And with that, we'll take any questions.
Council questions?
Do we have some of this lighting already downtown?
The downtown CID did install some of these wall sconces in the alley between Harpo's and Pizza Tree, the north-south alley.
Okay.
We've got folks here from the CID that would like to speak during the public comment section. Might be able to answer some of your questions on this, too.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe perhaps you can answer it, or if not, maybe the folks that are going to address this. But has this lighting, is this the same type of lighting that is in the downtown in some areas already? And was this, did the police department, was there input from the police department in terms of maybe a SEPTED approach or the, you know, the crime prevention through environmental design and so on? Has that been discussed with the LEDs that we're intending to purchase for this property? Do you know? Or?
Well, certainly as part of this project, the police department requested additional and improved lighting in the alleyways. This particular project will replace existing street lighting that, for the most part, is non-functional at this point in time. So we'll see some improvement in lighting, basically replacing lights that aren't currently working.
Yeah, so I expect that's consistent with the SEPTED approach. But great. Thank you.
Any other questions? I'll open the public hearing. Would anyone like to speak?
Hello, everyone. My name is Katie Essing with the Downtown CID at 11 South 10th Street. And yes, to answer your question, we did walk with the police last spring overnight. And it's pretty dramatic how dark many of these alleys are. So this is an important project to increase the safety and security for both our guests that use those alleys to get around downtown and also our businesses who are going back and forth to go to the dumpsters, different locations. So the location of the sconces on the 8th and Cherry Garage will be very helpful both for people using that alley behind that area, and it also houses one of our heaviest use trash and recycling locations. So this lighting will hopefully help with overall safety and also eliminate potential crimes and quality of life issues. So I can answer any other questions if you guys like.
Anyone else? Any discussion by council? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 291-15, Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Please read the consent agenda bills.
Items on the consent agenda include bills 281-15, 282-15, 283-15, 284-15, 285-15, 286-15, 288-15, 289-15, 290-15, 292-15, 293-15, 294-15, and resolutions 164-15, 165-15, 166-15, and 167-15.
Call the roll, please.
Bills 281-15, 282-15, 283-15, 284-15, 285-15, 286-15, 288-15, 289-15, 290-15, 292-15, 293-15, 294-15, and resolutions 164-15, 165-15, 166-15, and 167-15. Crap.
Yes.
Mr. Scala.
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Thomas.
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer.
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Ms. Peters.
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Please read the bills for introduction and first reading.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 295-15, 296-15, 297-15, 298-15, 299-15, 300-15, 302-15, 303-15, 304-15, 305-15, 306-15, 307-15, 308-15, 309-15, 310-15, 311-15, 312-15, 313-15, and 315-15, first reading.
The first report, 101-15, is a request asking us to refer parking regulations regarding fraternities and sororities in R3 medium density districts to planning and zoning. With a lot of the reconstruction going on, they're asking for build outs and to move their parking a distance away from the building that's currently not allowed by code. Am I right?
Yes, sir. That's correct. Zoning ordinance doesn't allow residential
right.
parking off-site.
So this, they're asking simply that we refer this issue to planning and zoning for their review, research, and recommendations.
That's correct.
Tim, to the extent that you know what the fraternities and sororities want. Would they also like relief in the amount of parking they're required to provide? Or would that be an alternative way of achieving their goal?
I think it's an alternative. I know we have had a history of the Greek houses going to the Board of Adjustment for parking reductions. Mm-hmm. We could probably produce those data for the Planning and Zoning Commission's benefit so they can kind of see what the trends have been. But this particular applicant, I believe they're acknowledging the requirement that's in the ordinance and just saying they'd like to meet their need off-site. They have two lots, one of which will have a larger house on it when they're completing their project, but less parking. The other will have no house on it, but they'd like to put parking there. And it's across the street. It's within a 500-foot radius. So that's the rule that they would request be added to the ordinance.
And in the normal
general rule in the ordinance, it could possibly benefit other houses.
And the current ordinance requires for this type of zoning, how much parking?
The ratio, it's one half of the rated occupancy for the fraternity or sorority, as the case may be.
One parking space per
every two
beds.
Occupants, that's correct.
Okay.
Would you like to have the Planning and Zoning review the minimum parking?
Yeah, I would. Let's have a longer discussion, right, especially in the central city areas, about relaxing the minimum parking.
Can I have a motion referring this, including minimum parking requirements, to the Planning and Zoning?
I'll make that motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion on this? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Report 102 has to do with the initiative regarding roll carts. Sufficient signatures have been obtained, and I'll ask staff for the next step.
Would you like me to comment, Sheila?
Yeah.
So on tonight's agenda, you have two bills. The next step is that you will council will consider at their next meeting two bills. One would be to pass the initiative ordinance in the form in which it was presented, and the second would be to send that ordinance to the voters for approval or rejection. At tonight's meeting, you did have a new bill that was introduced. We withdrew the one that was in the board packet and introduced a new bill. The new bill clarifies that what the petitioners are seeking is a repeal and reenactment of the current provisions related to recycling, residential recycling and solid waste pickup, in addition to the new amendments related to a prohibition of roll carts and automated collection vehicles for roll carts. So that's what was introduced this evening in the form of Bill 315-15.
That's first read.
That's correct. And then the other thing that of significance that occurred is that we did determine that the next available election date for municipal purposes is March 15 of 2016. You do have your general municipal election, which is the first Tuesday after the first Monday in April. But next year, we have the presidential preference primary, which occurs the second Tuesday after the first Monday in March. So that particular date has now been designated as available for issues, which would include municipal issues. And that is, under the charter, the date on which this particular issue will need to be submitted to the voters.
So even if SWAG said we'd rather you put it off till April, by charter we're unable to do that?
That's correct. Under Section 132 of the charter, we are required to put it on the next available election date for municipal election purposes.
Can I ask a process question too? There are going to be two issues, potential issues to vote on. Is that an either or? Do we have to take votes on both of those positions? Is one contingent upon the other? That is, I mean, do we have to vote on the issue as to whether to accept or reject the language that was written initially, and then go on to refer it to a public referendum, or is that
yes,
either?
If you reject the language, if the council does not choose to adopt the language that was put forth in the petition, then it's actually mandatory that you submit it to the voters. So while it's either or,
but we have really to. We have to weigh in on both of those issues. If we reject it, obviously, then we have to weigh in on sending it to a public referendum. It's necessarily, but do we have Do we have to deal with the issue as to whether, can we just send it on to the public referendum without voting on the issue as to whether we reject? You have to
You have to choose if you're going to adopt it or not adopt it. And if you choose not to adopt it, that does have the effect of sending it to the voters. So it mandates what your next vote will be on the next item. So the item that you're really considering is whether or not you adopt the ordinance in its current form as submitted. And you don't have the opportunity as a council to amend that ordinance that's been submitted to you. You have to take it exactly in the form in which it's been presented.
Thank you. I wasn't very clear about that, but that's what
this doesn't require action. It's informational, and the process is underway and will be adjudicated at the next meeting.
Yes, you'll have that opportunity.
The next report is a fairly sophisticated report on the Task Force on Community Violence recommendations and their status updates. While it is an informational report, it's a fairly detailed information report. I'll ask Mr. Trapp or Ms. Nauser if they want to comment on this, since they did the good work to establish the outcome of this task force.
Go ahead, Ms. Nauser.
Yes, thank you. This has been a process that I think our community can be very proud of. You know, it's important for the citizenry to keep on their government to make certain that we follow through. We do not want this report and recommendations from the task force to idly sit by on a shelf and pull it out 10 years later and say, oh, I wish we should have. So this is just kind of a snapshot of where we are today on some of these initiatives and recommendations that the task force had brought forward. We were able to get the information, compile it from staff as well as information from the juvenile office, or well, FACE for the Community Access Center, as well as information on what the school has been working on this time. So I think the document speaks for itself. It also shows that there's still a lot of things that need to be done. There's a lot of things that are in the beginning stages. I want to highlight that as we talked at the task force, it was not the intent of the task force to say this is everything that city municipal government can and will be able to solve. You will see in one of the columns on this report who the agencies are that we feel should have be tasked to address some of these issues. So that goes anywhere from nonprofits to READY to the city to the county, schools. So this is a community effort. This is not just a complete city effort. So again, this is a snapshot of where we are today, taking into account the most recent budget that we just passed. It shows the holes, so to say, of what we still have to accomplish. And this is the beginning of a community dialogue, and I encourage everyone to read this report and communicate with us their thoughts and concerns on this issue. And we're also planning on, I would like to say that we're planning on having a community meeting so that we can actually have a personal dialogue. It's not just us sitting up here at the dais and telling you what we have found. We want to hear what people say about what we've accomplished so far. And to my knowledge, this is still going to be on the 28th. So,
yeah, I won't be able to be there, I'm afraid.
Right. So those details will be forthcoming here very shortly. But again, that, I'm inviting anyone who has an interest in this to please attend that meeting and share your opinions and solutions to these issues. And I will leave it at that and let Mr. Trapp or Mr. Thomas, and we've all kind of worked on this over the past several months to get us to where we are today.
It has been a lot of work and effort by a broad swath of the community. I'm proud of the task force recommendations and the report as we look at it. It was a fine body of work based on a consensus from a diverse group of stakeholders over a long period of time, and very well written by Leland Rehard, really great staff person for that initiative. Would ask, Megan did a nice job on summarizing the progress that has been achieved. They're big goals. Sometimes we were very specific and very actionable, and some of our intentionally were very broad, and we definitely wanted to treat ending violence as something that city government is incapable of doing on its own, that it's going to take everyone in the community pulling together to address these issues. And we've made some good, steady progress, but we still have things further to go. Mr. Thomas mentioned the Chamber of Commerce leadership trip to Gainesville. And in many areas, we're holding our own or superior to Gainesville. It was validated overall about how well we're doing in Columbia. But boy, they really have their leaps and bounds ahead of us in law enforcement and community policing. They've been doing this for a long time. They've been proactively building relationships. There was one of the presenters who had a doctorate, and he was an at-risk kid that had got pulled into the police explorers and rattled off five or six police mentors over his period of time that led to him a very productive career in law enforcement. They are really doing some stuff about disproportionate minority contact, and they're really pace setters for us to look at of expanding the world of what's possible as far as law enforcement. They were able to do that with existing resources, but their existing resources was about twice as much as ours. So we do, you know, there's been some, the Race Matters folks, I very much appreciate them bringing these issues to front and center and raising this issue meeting after meeting, and really their endorsement and support for the task force recommendations. As far as community policing, there is an attitudinal shift that I think is underway that I see seeds of and I see elements of that's happening. But there's also an ability to be proactive in relationship building, mean that you can't be going from call to call to call. So we as a community are going to have to look deep and find resources so that we can have the kind of law enforcement that we deserve as a community that's going to support our efforts, that's going to prevent crime and not just bring criminals to justice. If we want to take that next leap forward, you know, we're going to have to find a way to come together as a community. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. But I see that it's happening in other communities. And again, I thank the city staff for their work. I think it was a nice, our work on the task force was a nice preview to the strategic plan as we broaden our focus on social equity and racial justice beyond just law enforcement to all of the things that we're going to need, you know, robust economic development, job opportunities, mentoring, and things that really get beyond just that simple issues of law enforcement. So do hope folks can come out for some discussion. And if I could ask city staff to please send an email notification to the former members of the task force about the meeting on the 28th. So that we can hopefully get some good attendance and reconnect with those folks and see how they think we're doing. We'll be presenting this, Megan's excellent work. That's what we get to do on City Council. We get to take credit for the hard work of our city staff. And then we'll also be talking about how does the community want to be involved in ongoing implementation and accountability efforts. And so out of this meeting, what we really hope for, the work product, is an implementation process so that we don't have to have an outside group bring it to our attention that we need to continued forward progress.
I appreciate the work of the community groups in pushing for implementation of the task force recommendations. Progress had been made, but with everything that's going on and coming at city staff and city council day to day, it is easy with the best will in the world for these kind of reports to get given a lower priority. But it's very important after investing all of the time and energy and expertise in the task force, Laura and Mike and all the members of the task force, that those actions are followed through on and that we have a transparent process for doing that. So, Megan, I know you've worked very hard over the last month or two to compile all of this information. I hope we can get it onto a web page like the comprehensive plan recommendations with a kind of a status that people can in the community can look at and see where we are and remind us about moving forward on those issues. And I think community policing is a really important one, and one that is coming up in conversations that we're having more and more. As Mike said, we did see a very proactive approach to reducing crime in Gainesville. One of the programs is to, once a month, youth in different neighborhoods are invited to come in and sit and have dinner and spend an evening going through various discussion topics with a police officer. And the people presenting to us were extremely passionate and excited about the benefits that this approach has, as well as a lot of very clear instructions to officers in the community to avoid arrests in situations where it really isn't warranted, even though it may be an eligible response by the officer, and to look for alternative ways to de-escalate a situation and keep particularly juveniles out of the criminal justice system. And it seems to be working really quite well from what we heard. So I think that was all I wanted to say. But I'm very happy that that our task force recommendations are getting a high profile, and the meeting on the 28th will be an opportunity, I think, to try to timeline some of the actions. And I'm sorry I won't be there, but if there are follow-up meetings, I will do my best.
Any other comments?
Yeah, just a couple of comments. First of all, I'm appreciative of all the work that went in on this on both ends, both Ms. Nauser and Mr. Trapp, and your contribution as well, Mr. Thomas. And bringing all of this together and along the lines of suggesting what you were suggesting, and that is, wouldn't it be nice to have some sort of a dashboard kind of issue that could rate these things as to the progress that was made? I mean, that's very helpful in lots of the policies and implementation pieces that we have, and I think that would be very useful for this piece as well, because it's obviously very crucial to the public. I also think this is a very propitious moment, because I'm glad to hear, I wasn't aware, but that you went to on the Gainesville trip and you gathered some of this information back from that perspective, because I was looking for an opportunity to share some of the information that I also brought back from Orlando. And the invitation that I got to participate in this the National League of Cities Racial Equality and Leadership Group, which really dovetails nicely into the same kinds of things you're talking about, because there's lots of groups that are now talking about the very same kinds of things in a very different fashion, and we need some time, even on the council, to inform each other as to what we brought back from some of these meetings. Maybe this meeting on the 28th is the opportunity to release some of that information, because I think there are some very useful strategies along the lines of even minority hires for contracting as part of the solution for some of these crime issues, not the least of which is also the business about community policing and the misunderstandings that a lot of people have about community policing, both in the community and within the police departments. So I think that's a discussion that absolutely needs to happen. Perhaps that'll be an opportunity to do this. But my kudos to the folks that worked on this on both ends and put this together, because it's certainly something to pay some attention to, given the gravity of the issue and the importance to our community.
I just want to add a couple more things. Thank you, Megan. I do appreciate, I know we worked on this together some, but you did all of the hard work, and I really appreciate you pulling everybody together. I know it's difficult, especially when you had to communicate with the school and others for all this information. And as we put this information on the website, I would ask if maybe we could put another link to the Crime Task Force final recommendations. When you go on the website, it is kind of difficult to find that document. And so anybody who wants to look at the work we did and then compare to where we are today, it's going to be difficult. So if we can somehow, through your wonders of IT, and link those things up and make it more prominent, I think this is something we should be proud of in our community, and we shouldn't hide it buried in the rest of all of the things that we talk about on a daily basis. So if there's a way to make a link that can maybe stay permanent for some time, that would be wonderful.
The next report is 10415, which is informational. Are there any questions about the transfer of funds between departments? If not, I'll open to the public. I'll yield 3 minutes to anyone who wants to talk about any topic.
Rick Shanker, 1829 Cliff Drive. I wanted to thank Nancy for the work she's done on the petition. I'm still not clear about a couple things. I hope she could straighten out. In regards to the position of SWAG, some people wanted early voting, some wanted later voting. But we all agree that we don't want the city to have to spend additional monies to put this thing on in any way. So if we can do it cheaper one way than the other, that's what we would like. But I'm not sure as to what the council's next actions are. Nancy, do you mind repeating that, please?
Okay, the council, there will be two bills on the council agenda. They were both on introduction and first read this evening, and they will be on for discussion at the next council meeting. One bill is to enact the ordinance as presented, and the other is to submit it to the voters.
Okay.
So if the council decides that it does not want to enact the ordinance as presented, then it will go to the voters.
Okay. I thought there was something about the wording they had to agree on first.
No, the ballot language is included in the bill that would send it to the voters.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the clarification.
And it is, and then I'll address the date of the election. The charter actually calls that it requires that it go to the next available election for municipal election purposes. So we really don't have a choice.
Okay. We talked about this before the weekend, and she didn't know. She did work over the weekend. So thanks again.
Anyone else? Seeing none, we'll move to council comments. Anyone?
I have some comments. they'll be brief. For the past couple of council meetings, I've spoken about the Columbia Alliance to Combat Homelessness. This is a community-based group that has grown out of the Room at the Inn initiative. We have a vision to build a comprehensive shelter for the homeless that will service that community year-round, unlike the Room at the Inn program, which only services the community during the winter months. We were in partnership with the city to build this facility on city-owned property on 8th Street. In order to pursue this appropriately, we met with the North Central Neighborhood Association and also a representation from the Ridgeway Association on October 6th. It was a lively encounter, to say the least. One of the things I wanted to clarify is that the residents of the surrounding community are very much in favor of our vision to build a comprehensive homeless shelter. However, they do not feel that it should be built in a residential neighborhood, particularly their residential neighborhood. They have certain concerns about public safety, about other issues that impact their neighborhoods already because of the other services for the homeless that are there. And we met with them a second time to hear these concerns and to clarify these concerns, and I believe that their concerns are absolutely legitimate. And we were not really prepared to answer all of these concerns because these are things that would have to be worked out over time. One of the things we did discover is that the proposed property is probably too small to build a facility that will meet all the needs that are appropriate for a center like this, and so we have decided to maintain our commitment to building the facility, but to pull back from building it at that location. So until further notice, the tentative plans for that facility are on hold. I also wanted to speak about another special initiative that's happening in the city between the Columbia Housing Authority and a newly formed organization that is called the Central Missouri Opportunity Council. This is a group of citizens of which I've been working with that has chosen to focus their agenda on the development of minority and women-owned companies in order to create more opportunities, not only for contractual work, but also to create new jobs. And so their first kickoff meeting will be on Monday, October the 26th. It is a networking networking event to discuss and expand opportunities for these two groups. And so we will be there with representatives from the Columbia Housing Authority and MoDOT and other organizations to work with those who are interested. So those are my comments.
Where is that going to be?
It's going to be at Oak Towers. I forgot that. It's going to be at Oak Towers in their community room starting at 5 o'clock on Monday, October the 26th. Free parking and light refreshments.
Have you invited Reddy into this?
Not at this point. We have not invited Reddy, have we? We have? Okay. Yes. Yes, we have.
Because I know we've had some conversations over the last two or three years about initiatives similar to this.
Yeah, it's very similar.
I would hope they would be very interested in helping.
I just have two things this evening. I've had a couple people contact me who work in the downtown area that are concerned with a couple of skateboarders who don't seem to pay attention to any of our pedestrian or traffic rules and are darting out on their skateboards, coming out of alleys, going on their skateboards with earphones in, listening to their music. Extremely dangerous, and some of these people do deliveries around downtown and are concerned one of these individuals are going to come flying out in front of them. So I don't know what enforcement we have downtown, but it would certainly be a good idea, especially during some of these warmer days, if we've got units downtown to keep an eye on some of these skateboarders exhibiting dangerous behavior.
Me too.
And then on my way to work this morning, I'm driving down State Farm Parkway, Providence, take a ride on State Farm Parkway, and there's the roundabout. And in the roundabout, we have one of our community adopt-a-spots for gardens, or, you know, flower beds. And I noticed that there's very tall decorative grass. Well, from a few cars back, you cannot really see somebody who is not tall in stature. And so it concerns me that if there's some, you know, child or somebody that's crossing that crosswalk at that roundabout and they are not driving a slow enough speed and they come up to that roundabout, because it's the roundabout, there's no other people coming onto the roundabout, so you only have to look to your left. And so people kind of just know they go 35 miles an hour and hit that roundabout without stopping. And so that seems to be a potential problem. And so I don't know if, you know, whoever takes care of the adopt-a-spots needs to go out there and look at that decorative grass to make certain that it's not going to inhibit any motorist from seeing a pedestrian walking through that crosswalk. So that's it.
Yeah, I'd like to refer back to our scheduled public comments this morning, earlier this evening. And thank Dick for his analysis of how we can meet EPA goals through a combination of energy efficiency and increasing the proportion of our energy from renewable sources, as well as the three speakers who talked about the Community Violence Task Force and the racial divide in Columbia. I'm really happy that this conversation is continuing to happen and that citizens are bringing it forward to us and getting it out into the public space. Happy that the university administration is responding to some of the calls on campus to address this issue. I don't know that anybody knows what all of the right paths are, but at least we're having an open dialogue about it, and I think that's an essential first step to reach any satisfactory conclusion. I'm also going to pass, where did it go? Did we pick it up already? I had the big bus timetable for, oh, here it is. This is, Bob, you might be interested to see this. This is the timetable for the Gainesville bus system. It does depend on student fees. I think it's $9 per credit hour, which is actually higher than the ones that we looked at around here in Ames and Lawrence and Champaign-Urbana. But the result is that in Gainesville, which had a population of 127,000 2 years ago, there are 70,000 students. And every one of them pays, I think it's about $200 to $220 a year for free bus travel throughout the city. In addition to that, there's another 33,000 employees, many of them at the University of Florida, who also have a free bus pass through a program that the transit system has with any employer that wishes to buy bus passes for their entire workforce. It has to be the entire workforce, and they pay a rate of $7.50 per month times the number of employees they have. But they have 11 million rides per year, their buses are very clean and plentiful. The campus routes are very well used, and then there's something like 30 community routes that go out, and the size of the city is not much bigger than ours. So it was an impressive system. Gary Ward was on the trip. He saw this. I don't think the University of Missouri understands the benefits that having a transit system like that will bring to the University of Missouri as well as to the City of Columbia and to all of our residents, but I think we should continue to make the case for that and reach towards that goal.
Yeah, I just have a few things. One is it's always remarkable that we have these moments that where we start talking about the same kinds of things. Some of you are talking about the Gainesville trip and bringing back some of this information, particularly as it relates to public safety, and then some of it has to do with transit. Also at that meeting that I suggested, the one in Orlando, I brought back a flash drive that contains a presentation that the mayor from Orlando presented with regard to minority contracting. And this was for public facilities. It was one of those solutions that he has upped his ante in terms of the amount of respect that he has gotten because of some of the solutions in building a rather large stadium and breaking up some of these things to sizable chunks that minority contractors could actually participate in. And it was supposedly it was a county-city kind of coordination because they were having some difficulty with their state government, just as we sometimes have difficulty with ours. But I certainly will share some of this with you, and we need to chat about some of this stuff because some of the ideas I think are really going to be pretty good to discuss. A couple of other things, a lot more parochial, but just as important to the folks that mentioned them. And I was recently at a neighborhood association meeting. We got to talking not only about public safety but also about some traffic issues, and one of these, or two of them, are actually related. And it's an area that maybe the city manager will note to take a look at, perhaps in terms of getting one of those trailers out there for speed and so on. It's on Kelsey between Lake of the Wood, when Kelsey runs into Lake of the Woods Road. And it's really a speedway because it's a very wide road, and it's got a bit of a hill to it, but it really is a thoroughfare. So I was asked to ask about the possibility of either, you know, at one time we had talked about getting people trained in speed guns, and some of these folks are willing to do that, or at least have some sort of a trailer there to slow down some of these folks so somebody really doesn't get killed. And in this same area, I got another correspondent. We were chatting about all of this stuff, and there was if you'll take a look at where Rice Road joins with Shamrock, it gets to be a very narrow road in that area, and whatever it will take to evaluate whether or not that needs some sort of traffic calming or perhaps parking on one side, much as I hate to go to parking on one side stuff because of some of the recent difficulties that we've had, but some evaluation on how we might make that a safer intersection, because it is rather narrow and it's 35 mile an hour speed, and I don't know what's appropriate, but take a look at that and make some recommendations, and then we can act on that. That's all I have. Thank you.
Is that everything? Adjourned.